Okay, great. Thank you all for coming. We're leaving now the topic of Talmud Torah in Rav Kook, the Rav, and the Rebbe. I mean, even though we didn't finish the Rebbe last week, we want to do a little bit before Purim. Today we're going to do something from Mitzvah Vayetzeh, and the next week we'll do something from Rav Kook, the Rav Rebbe, one or the other, maybe both. I want to talk a little bit about Simchas Purim in their thoughts, and we'll see how the concept of Simchas Purim is sort of symptomatic or paradigmatic of some of the things we discussed in the past. Things to know about Rabbi Soloveitchik coming in. Number one, he always says philosophy has to start off with the halachos. First, analyze the sukkos, and then build up from the sukkos. Number two, he's not a very happy camper in terms of the range of Jewish thinkers. Simcha is an important emotion, but not the be all and end all. And particularly, if you're going to read Halachic Man, external expressions of simcha, wild dancing, wild clapping, is not necessarily something which he thinks very, very highly of. So let's start off with a piece from the Emek Bracha. Emek Bracha was Aryeh Pomerantz, who was a student of the Brisker Rav, and unfortunately passed away at a young age. So he has a piece here where he quotes a Brisker Rav about the nature of Simchas Purim. So it's at the bottom. We'll read the first paragraph and then the last one. Megillah Daf Zayin. You have to drink wine, eat meat until you get drunk and fall asleep in your drunkenness. Even though we never find by Simchas Yom Tov and a regular Yom Tov Pesach Shavuos Sukkos, you have to eat meat and drink wine together. El Yotzini de Simcha B'Yayin L'Chuda, right? The Shulchan Aruch is one who adds in Basar Yayin in the Rambam. It's only Yayin. Kisa B'Perek Arvi P'sak and Daf Kuf Tes. Kinkasa V'Yis Yosef Simin Taf Kuf Tes. Hakashayni. Over here, you have to eat meat and drink wine. Kim D'Ksiv Mishta V'Simcha. V'Yin Simcha El B'Basar V'Yayin. Basar O'Yayin. V'Kim D'Ksiv Mishta Hainu Yayin Haru Yayin Kvar Amor. And Kim Ani Mekayin V'Simcha. A karkok tahinu basar. A karkok be'inan kan shnei biyachad basar b'yayin. So you have generally speaking, you have just a din of simcha. Simcha acquires basar or yayin. Over here it says mishta v'simcha. Mishta, by definition, it means wine. Therefore, simcha must include basar. You have to have basar v'yayin. So we know there's a separate din on Purim. It's not just simcha, it's mishta v'simcha. Good. You can equal something from Yisrael Salanter about the nature of drinking on Purim. It's an important read. And then he quotes something from the Brisker Rav, the last paragraph. Why is Simchas Purim different? There's no din of getting drunk on Purim. And regular Yom Tov, the nature of the mitzvah is to be l'smach b'Hashem. And the Basar V'Yayin are just ways to induce that type of emotion. That the simcha is really b'Hashem. We'll see what that means in a second, according to Rabbi Soloveitchik. And the blessed of Yayin are ways to be over that emotion. Aval b'Purim came with the ksiv mishta v'simcha. Dimsa da hamishta atzma hihi guf hamitzva b'li shum tachlisim shel simcha. But by Purim, it's Mishta v'Simcha. The Ikar is on the Mishta. The mitzvah is just to party, just to drink, without the goal being to me'orer any emotion. The Tachlis itself is the drinking, is the partying. V'yisod zeh shel mitzvah mishta tiknu din zeh shechayev v'sumi adol yada. Right, and that's why there's a mitzvah adol yada. So I remember reading this at some point in my life. I forgot when. And I was like a little bit surprised. It's like, what's shot? Like, in regular Yom Tov, you get it. Like, you're supposed to eat meat, and drink wine. Because it's a way to make you happy so you can be the smach b'Hashem. Why is there a din mishta that just requires partying without any other tachlis? The tachlis of b'fnei atzmo, according to the Brisker Rav, is just mishta, just the party.
It's a question you can ask more so because the din derabanan, so it needs to make sense more so.
Right, I guess so. I mean, it's based off the Pesukim in Miguel's Esther, Mishta V'Simcha. It's still in the Rabbanan, Divrei Kabbalah, whatever it is. Is Machlokas Rish Achronim, if I recall correctly, if all the mitzvot are Divrei Kabbalah or Divrei Rabbanan. But yeah, whatever it is. So again, this is a Brisker Rav, halachic analysis of the Sugya. Soloveitchik has the exact same halachic analysis of the Sugya, but we will see, he then goes on to the next step and says, what does this mean for me when I celebrate Purim? What is the philosophy, so to speak, behind it? The subjective correlates to this lumdus. And you find this several times, that the Rav and the Brisker Rav have the same exact lumbos. The Gemara Shir would have went exactly parallel, but the Rav Soloveitchik adds on in a drasha or some other form of writing, adds on some type of subjective correlate, so to speak. This is the experiential side of this piece of lumbos. But the lumbos is exactly the same, and the lumbos serves as the basis for Rav Soloveitchik's philosophy. So again, so I don't know if the Brisker Rav, this is what the Brisker Rav meant, what he didn't mean. I don't know if he thought in these terms. We'll see what Rav Soloveitchik does. It's similar to what we did much earlier on in the year and by Shofar. The Rav and the Brisker Rav are the same as Akiso. The Shofar is a din tefila. They prove it from the same proofs. But the Rav has a drasha which says, what does it mean that Shofar is a din tefila? What does that mean to me when I pray? And he went on to explain that there are two types of tefila. There's a articulate tefila and non-articulate tefila. There is a tefila where you stand in front of Hashem as a human being with a great mind, and you poetically describe your needs to Hashem, and there's a tefila where you just cry out in frustration and in futility. Again, that is the subjective experiential correlate to the objective lundus, and that's a second stage of doing Jewish philosophy, according to the Rav, but the foundational point always has to be the lundus. So this essay is taken from the book, The Days of Deliverance. I don't remember if this was an essay Rav Soloveitchik wrote but never published, which a lot of the essays from these books are, or it is just a public lecture that somebody transcribed. I don't remember the source of this one, but let's go through it. Two kinds of joy. So the beginning, he basically sets up the exact same thing that Brisker Rav set up. What is the nature of the obligation to rejoice in Purim? The Talmud teaches, Rav said one's obligated to become inebriated in Purim until he cannot distinguish between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordecai. The Ram quotes the Rambam. In the next paragraph, Kosakai Adam cautions, therefore our sage is obligated one to get drunk, and at least to drink more than is usual in order to remember the great miracle. But for one who knows of himself that he would neglect one of the mitzvos, like washing your hands, you shouldn't get so drunk. Great. Perfect. Oh, Agav, I remember a speech seeing somewhere, I forgot where, that the pshat in the din mishtah of the Brisker Rav is that the Lavush says that the reason why we party in Purim is a zechar for the Nes of Purim, because all the nisim happened around parties. They all happened around mishtah yayin. So maybe that's pshat in the Brisker Rav. Is this a separate din in mishtah yayin? Why? It's a zechar for the Nes. Again, the Brisker Rav doesn't explain what the basis for the din mishtah yayin would be, but that could be one option. We're going to see Rav Soloveitchik goes in a different direction. Good. Next page. But what is strange is that we know the mitzvah of rejoicing is applicable not only to Purim, but to all the Shlosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage festivals as well. Yet we have never come across a law or a norm that would require a person to become drunk on Passover, Shavuos, or Sukkot. On the contrary, the Rambam in Hilchos Yom Tov emphasizes you cannot get drunk on a regular Yom Tov, etc., etc. Skip the Rambam, you can read it afterwards. Maimonides says distinctly that Simcha does not include intoxication. Yet concerning Purim, a new concept has been introduced. The concept of joy or simcha has been modified and converted into hilarity or gaiety. Indeed, one cannot even call this joy or simcha. True joy is an eternal experience. We'll get a further definition in a second. It has nothing to do with the external behavior of man. Joy does not express itself in singing or dancing. One can be very quiet or very sedate, very contemplative or meditative, and still have a great deal of happiness and joy. Joy is indeed a quiet, meditative experience. On the contrary, when joy somehow explodes, we should question the sincerity and depth of that person's experience of joy. Sometimes one demonstrates joy simply to overcome a feeling of insecurity and doubt that lies within. Right, think Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. When you're starting to feel sad, what should you do? Clap your hands, go ahead and dance, force yourself to be happy. For Soloveitchik, that is an expression of insecurity. That's an expression of internal angst. I don't know what to do. I want to hide the fact I'm feeling insecure, so I'm going to externalize my emotions. I'm going to externalize my joy by singing and dancing. That is not true joy. True joy is an inner contemplative experience. Sometimes it might include dancing, when halacha requires it. Right? In Halacha Command, he tells a story about the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon used to dance wildly and clap a lot during Hakafos. But immediately when the conflicts were over, he was immediately back in control of himself. Immediately, his serious, austere, sincere self. So from Soloveitchik, simcha is an eternal experience, usually meditative, contemplative, sometimes externalized. Whenever it's externalized, always be cautious if the person isn't really happy, he's just trying to overcome an insecurity. Great. But on Purim, we know it has to be externalized. You have to drink a lot. You have to party. So what's shot with that? Also, as far as the three festivals are concerned, our sages introduce a concept of Chatzi Lashem, Chatzi Lachem. And so half the day is Tefillah Torah. Purim, if you're drunk, you're not spending half your day in Torah and Tefillah. And why you? They overcame that with the Kima of a Kibbutz Kolo. So the morning is learning, the second half of the day is partying. Maybe that's based on maybe you should ask a question on that from Motzon Vejik Tassay. Well, he says there is no Din Chatzi Lashem in Purim over here, so why should he be learning in the morning? He should be partying all day. Whatever it is, but either way, there's no formal Din Chatzi Lashem, Chatzi Lachem in Purim.
We'll shut down this Chabura.
Sorry. Go down. Next paragraph. With Purim, there is a completely different concept of Simcha. It is joy that consists exclusively of eating and drinking. Mishtet, partying, becomes the key to Simcha. Not internal, but external. As a matter of fact, the Gemara tells a very strange story about Rabbah and Reb Zera, the story of Rabbah kills Reb Zera. Skip down. They evidently drank to self-abandonment. Gesundheit. Rabbah, the great scholar, actually inflicted physical harm upon Reb Zera. It sounds like he's taking the story literally. Finally, Reb Zera recovered miraculously. The next year, Rabbi Zera was afraid to join Rabbah. He was afraid that this time again, he would be killed. Again, why is there this idea of self-abandonment on Purim, not on the festivals? On the Regalim, we have a measure of joy, joy with solemnity and earnestness. He goes on to say that according to many Rishonim, there's a din simcha on Rosh Hashanah, a din simcha on Yom Kippur. That you see simcha, according to these Gaonim and Rishonim, has nothing to do with external manifestations of joy. Because what external manifestations of joy are there on Yom Kippur? You're not eating, you're not drinking, and there's no mishtah. You're standing in shul all day. And still there is a din simcha. You mentioned simcha v'sason in your tzvilos. So you see, minakatsa alakatsa. Not just in the Shlosh Regalim, simcha, which expresses itself in Basar V'yayin, is basically an internal experience, but simcha even exists when there is no external manifestations at all, such as Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. Next level of the question, next level of the argument, the bottom paragraph over here. And Purim, the popular concept of simcha is accepted. Joy and gaiety. It has nothing to do with the feeling of tranquility, serenity, or peace of mind. It is not an inner experience. It is more active, as if I were happy. Sometimes we see people acting as if they were happy, but it is a false sense. Again, whenever people are externalizing simcha, you should always be choshesh that it's not true simcha. People try to deceive themselves and deceive others, and somehow give the impression as if they were happy, while in fact they were very unhappy and depressed. And this, the concept of happiness, was introduced for Purim. So on regular Yom Tov, you have to feel happy. On Purim, you're supposed to act as if you're happy, even though you're not. Right? That's basically, again, setting. That's basically what the Brisker Rebbe is saying, that the din mishta without a din simcha. Simcha being defined as an internal feeling. Goes on to say that Judaism never had a positive orientation, a positive conceptualization of drama, of the theater. Right? The Romans and the Greeks had theaters. He quotes Aristotle that theater was a very important part philosophically and culturally for the Greeks and later the Romans. Judaism rejected that. They did not like the Greek theater. And yet, what is the one time during the year when there's a minhag to have plays? Skip down to after the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. However, I still remember as a child the theatrical shows, the Spielen, that I saw among Jews on Purim. Many people used to walk around in costume with masks, some as Haman or Mordecai. They would stage and reenact the story of Purim. We know the ruling of the Ramah, you're supposed to dress up. We see that Purim is not a day of joy, but rather a day of fun making or light gaiety, of good heartedness and unrestricted hilarity, but not a din simcha. So what is simcha, and what is supposed to be accomplished on Purim? So this vart is something which is represented in the Artsai Shirim. It's quoted in Hari Kadim. It could be something which you guys came across somewhere or other, but it's basically the same idea as the Brisker Rav. Let's look at the next paragraph. Joy in the divine presence. I'm sorry, the page numbers got cut off when I scanned these in. It says, why is this? On a holiday, there is a serious mood as recommended. Joy that expresses itself in an inner feeling of peace of mind and serenity, harmony and tranquility. Some things that other people may not refer to as simcha, as joy. This joy does not contradict meditation and a reflective attitude on life. For instance, on Sukkot, the holiday of joy, we read Kohelis. Apparently, Chazal did not see any contradiction between the reading of Ecclesiastes and the joy of a holiday. The reason I believe is as follows. Joy, according to Halakha, can be experienced only when the person is in the presence of Hashem. The definition of simcha is exactly what the Brisker Rav said. You're being masameach b'Hashem, you feel the presence of God. Whenever the Torah says v'samachta, you shall rejoice, there is always a qualification, l'fnei Hashem lokaka, before the Lord your God. And he quotes the various psukim. The feeling of joy and the awareness of the unseen presence of the Almighty are identical. Man feels that he has come close to the wellsprings of being, capital B. He feels very close to his roots, that he is somewhere in the presence of his Maker. Man experiences his companionship. And then there is joy in the sense of self-fulfillment, the sense of feeling that there's meaning to your life, that you're connected to something transcendent, you're connected to something that is beyond. The definition of simcha is lifnei Hashem. Basar v'yayin is there to be ma'orer that simcha, to put you into a human, regular, emotional, good mood, to allow you to feel the divine presence that's there on a Yom Tov. But the ikar definition of simcha on a Yom Tov is lifnei Hashem, which doesn't express itself externally. It's just a feeling in front of Hashem. Again, if you want to see this develop more in Lamdos, not just in Pesach Sukkim, the Rav is a yard site here, where he develops this idea. I'm sorry?
It's Kavod Onik Shabbos, right?
I don't remember which one it is. Kavod Onik Shabbos, I think also in the one about Avelos being Nidchav in a Yom Tov, then he develops the same idea. But again, Briskerot, here's what the Emek Bracha quoted from the Briskerot in two lines. The simcha is the experience of Hashem. Next paragraph. Joy, according to Judaism, is not an emotion or a mood. I think joy is an emotion. Moods are passing and superficial, right? This is classic of Soloveitchik. We don't trust religious subjectivism. We don't trust emotions. What do we trust? We trust a certain level of deep, constant experiences. They're not integrated into the personality, and they do not express the inner awareness of the personality. Sometimes people can fall into a depressive mood. This does not mean their I exist awareness is a weakness or undermined. A mood can be due to a smile or a word dropped by an acquaintance or an item read in the paper. A mood can be provoked by any stimulus. On Purim, it is a mood, not an experience that is evoked.
What does I exist awareness mean?
I assume it means that their basic definition of themselves. Meaning, your basic definition of yourself doesn't change when you're feeling sad. But it does change when you're feeling with Hashem. And he's gonna describe what changed in the Jewish people on Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, why therefore the correspondent experience is an experience of lifnei Hashem, which again changes the basic personality of the person, as opposed to Purim, where things didn't fundamentally change. Then he goes on, he goes through how Simchas Yom Tov is Docha Avelos. Again, there's no stira per se, Rishon already asked this, there's no stira per se between eating basar, drinking yayin, and Avelos. But the stira takes place on an internal level. You can't feel simcha and feel avelos at the same time. Another raya, that simcha on Yom Tov isn't external, but it's internal. It's a feeling of Nei Hashem. Avelos, according to Rav Soloveitchik, is the exact opposite feeling, that you're nidcha, that there's a gemara that says that when you're in chirim, you are nidcha from Hashem. I forgot the exact lashon, that you're no longer in the presence of Hashem. Soloveitchik's one of these yesodos about avelos, again, both in Tashkafik's farm and in the Lundish pieces. So Avelos is an experience of feeling rachok from Hashem. And again, he develops that both in Lamdos and in Hashkafa. So where are we going from here? Flip the page over. I hope I'm going the right way. Nope, I'm not. You have to turn the page. Great. Next page. The top word is away on the part of God. The third paragraph is, on Purim, then there is apparently no concept of lifnei Hashem. The awareness of God's presence is applicable to the three festivals, the Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. This awareness of lifnei Hashem has not been emphasized in Purim, and that's why he says, there's a machlokas machaber on the Ramah, if Simchas Purim is doka avilos, machaber says not at all. The Ramah says, for dvarim shefer hesya, it's doka, but not dvarim shefer tzinah. That's the way Ashkenazim paskin. But it's not doka avilos in the sense that avilos continues afterwards. So you see there's no stira between the internal feeling of sadness of avilos and the simcha that we experience, or the mishta, or whatever joy we experience in Purim. So why on Purim do we not have a feeling of lifnei Hashem, but we do external actions as if we were happy? What happened in Purim? Salvation without transformation. We do not say how on Purim. One opinion in the Gemara explains this is due to the fact that on Purim the miracle was not final. We're still servants of Akashverosh in the end. Next paragraph. Take into consideration Akashverosh and his changing moods. He killed his beautiful queen at the suggestion of Mamukha, and it was Haman. A few months later, he killed Haman at the suggestion of his new beautiful queen, Esther. He was unstable. No one could be confident the next day he would not demote Mordecai and appoint a new Haman. There was no sense of security. The miracle was incomplete. There was no Hatzalah salvation. There was Hatzalah salvation, but no Geula redemption. Anybody who's read things from Rav Soloveitchik knows that Geula redemption is one of the key terms in this thought. Represents all good things, basically. That's why that which happened on Pesach and Shavuos changed the people. On Pesach, the bondman became a free man. On Shavuos, we got the Torah. On Sukkot, something else happened. Forgot exactly what he says. But something fundamentally changed about the Jewish people, something forevermore, that corresponds with an experience of being with Lifnei Hashem on those holidays. On Purim, we were saved. There was a crisis, and we were saved from it. but the feeling of insecurity that was engendered by the crisis was still there, because Ahasuerus is still the king, history is still unstable, we still have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. Next paragraph, what happened in Purim was not of a permanent nature. They were saved, of course. However, no one could guarantee the next day the same story would not repeat itself. That is why there's no halal. That's pshat in the Kate Avdei Ahasuerus Hanan. Not just the fact that we're still in Galus, but the fact that our entire mindset is one of insecurity, one that we don't know what the next Ahasuerus is going to do. Turn the page. He says, that's why the Rishonim, again, you look in the halakhic sources, Purim is characterized as a Yom Tzvila. Quotes Rav Amram Gaon. This is one of Rav Rosenzweig's favorite Rav Amram Gaons. I've heard him quote this a lot around Purim time. The Rav Amram Gaon, quoted in the Torah, used to insist that you say Tachanon on Purim. I think one of the Gaonim also used to say Tachanon even on Purim night or something. You say Vuhur Achon. I forgot exactly what you say. Something about Tfila immediately prior to reading the Megillah. What is the Makar in the Gemara? You say Kriyas Megillah is not just a day but also a night. Look down at the bottom of the page. Chazal detected a sense of insecurity in the Megillah. Megillah Dalad Amud Aleph, top of the next column. When it's obligated to read the Megillah at night and to repeat it on the day, as it says, "Oh my God, I call unto you by night, but you answer not, and at night, and there is no surcease for me." What does this verse have to do with the Megillah? The Megillah is, on the contrary, a hallel, a hymn. Apparently, Chazal identified the Megillah not only with a hymn, but with a great prayer as well, a prayer which rises mimamakim from the depths of a person in despair. Purim represents human insecurity, human frailty. Random things happen, you end up in a crisis. Random things happen, you end up in a good place. Davening, tefillah, for Absolutic, emerges from that point of crisis. Kriyas and Megillah is a form of halal, is a form of tefillah. It's a tzaka to Hashem. Tachanun is emphasized by Rav Amram Gaon. There is no true feeling of simcha, of inner tranquility, inner serenity that you experience when you feel close to Hashem on Purim. Insecurity of the Jew. Next paragraph. Next section. For instance, in Ahasuerus' palace, there were two conspirators, Bigson and Zeresh. They hatched a plot to murder the king and to depose Haman. What does that have to do with the Jews? Again, we read somewhere that the Jews got involved. And the thing became known to Mordecai. As a result, the Jewish people were involved in an internal feud between Haman and the opposition. He says this happens, repeats itself over and over again in Jewish history. Jews are just trying to mind their own business. Jews are just trying to stay in the sidelines. Yet they get embroiled in other people's conflict, other people's disputes, and they get scapegoated for whatever problems are existing in that society, the same way Haman took advantage of the Jews to be the scapegoat. Let's read the last two paragraphs. True. The Jews succeeded in defeating Haman. There was a miracle. The Jews were saved. Of course, we have to celebrate the miracle, but there was no guarantee, no security. That is why Chazal did not introduce the concept of simcha, as it was recommended by the Torah vis-a-vis the three festivals. Rather, they introduced a different concept of simcha, gaiety, fun, which is just acting, and it is not sincere. The concept of Lifnei Hashem was not applied to Purim. I thought he said it over here. I think he says it in a different essay. I have to check it up. He talks about why do people drink? Why do people get drunk? Insecurity. You are not sure about the future, so you get drunk. It's like abandonment. It's like the way you deal with your insecurities, the way you deal with human frailty. That's what Chazal were trying to get at when they spoke about drinking on Purim. It's an expression of human insecurity, expression of human frailty. What is the religious response? Tefillah. Purim ends up being a day of day when we appreciate human insecurity and a Yom Tefillah. That's look at the Rambam in his introduction to Sefer Mitzvos. He has a pasuk there, a little comment there about Purim. And he quotes a pasuk about the Rambam in the end of Minyan Mitzvah Katzar has three lines about Dinim Derabanan. He mentions Purim there, and he talks about Purim as the pasuk in Sefer Devarim. I can't remember it now. That whenever you call out to Hashem, Hashem answers you. He characterizes Purim as a Yom Tefillah. Again, it's one of Rav Rosenzweig's favorite mekoros about Purim. Rav Amram Gaon, you say Tachanun. It's connected with Tanis. It's the same chalos as Tanis Esther. Tanis is also a yom. Is also a yom tzara. It's a yom tefila. So that's exactly what Purim is all about, according to this essay of Rabbi Soloveitchik. We do not celebrate Purim like Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, because I want to emphasize the distinctiveness of Purim. It is not the type of holiday that should be celebrated with halo, the awareness of being lifnei Hashem. The victory is not final. The triumph is not decisive. A repetition is possible. That is why we cannot equate the celebration of Purim with Simchas Teregel, the joy of the festival. So you see how many themes of Rav Soloveitchik come into this piece, in addition to the piece itself. You start off with the lumdos, same exact lumdos as the Brisker Rav. You're comparing Simchas Yom Tov to Simchas Purim, and the experience the Purim from Soloveitchik, which he gets out of that, is something which is about human insecurity, fear, tension, anxiety, crisis, which ends up with external actions of simcha to emphasize the lack of inner emotion that's there, lack of inner experience that's there, but ends up as being a Yom Tzvila. Kriyas and Megillah is a form of Tzvila. Thank you so much. Hope everybody has a happy Purim.